Welcome to The Rink, your weekly source for hockey talk without the entitlement. I'm James Tate Blake Grayley, and along with Tom Luongo. It was a light week hockey-wise, but Tom and I are still picking two heavy topics. The NHL is only shelling out $13.3 million for the Coyotes at this point, so who would want to be an owner at the NHL? Also, should the league legislate out headshots? That's right, you better keep your head up out there, you're going to get knocked on your keister. Welcome to The Rink. Tom, headshots are becoming the big topic again around the league. Everybody seems to be discussing legislating out headshots. I know I have some feelings about it, but more and more players are being carted off the ice right now, and it's not a good scene.
No, it really isn't. And I have a lot to say about the subject, as I always have. We've seen, what, four or five incidents of different, severity over the first month of the season. And, I have a lot of opinions about the latest one being, of course, is the Andrew Ladd hit on Matt Agostini. And I have, like everybody else, different opinions about different hits in the different contexts of each of the hits. And that's what makes this subject so difficult to, have a rational discussion about.
Right. Now, when you say context, you aren't saying like context of the game. You're talking about the context of that hit.
Yeah, it's absolutely the situation of the hit itself, in that the difference between the hit that Willie Mitchell laid on Jonathan Toews is completely different than Mike Richards hitting David Booth or Andrew Ladd hitting Matt D'Agostini, in terms of position and direction and all of those things, and basic vector math, and to be honest with you. For the Mitchell hit on Toews, I didn't really have much of any problem with it. I mean, it's just a good solid. It's a good solid hit. It's like the Campbell hit on Umberg, it's in the course of the game. This Mitchell saw his opportunity. Toews received the pass, and Mitchell hit him with the shoulder and didn't just plowed through him and knocked him down. Mm-hmm. The Richards hit on Booth, completely different. More reminds me of the Neil hit on Drury from 3 years ago, where Richards took a blind angle to Booth, couldn't see him, and hit him in the head coming at a 90 degree angle, or like a 60 or 70 degree angle, blind angles, and targeted Booth's head. And had he taken a slightly different vector, he'd have gone shoulder to shoulder or shoulder to scapula.
And chances are still won that battle.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. He would have knocked Booth. If had he hit him shoulder to shoulder, he'd have probably knocked Booth down, considering the position that the guy was in. Knocked him face down into the ice, probably knocked out a couple of teeth, maybe broke his nose. The puck would have scored a free, and that would have been the end of it.
Yeah.
If that happens in that situation, Mike Richards takes that shot, no problem. The Dion Phaneuf hit on Kyle Okposo went in preseason, where Okposo is covered by two other Flames, and Phaneuf just freelances and takes the guy's head off for no reason, other than because he's Dion Phaneuf and he's a jackass.
Yeah. Well, and the question becomes, to me, is what is the point of the hit? And then you get to the philosophy of what is the point of hitting in hockey, and the point of hitting is to body the guy off the puck. It's not about destroying him. It's not about ending a career. It's about getting the puck.
Right. Possibly, and at the same time, of course, getting under the guy's skin and, getting him off his game and making him a little afraid and all of those things. And those are all secondary issues. But these hits like this, at the speed these guys are – and this is the thing that's being lost in most of the discussion. If you read the interminable comment threads on Puck Daddy or wherever – On these hits, you see the same thing over and over again. No one's talking about the fact that these guys are faster, stronger, wearing more protection, that they can be used as a weapon than when we were all in diapers or we were all teenagers watching the game in the 70s and the 80s. And for Colin Campbell, for example, to make the comments he did about the Mike Richards hit on David Booth and say that, hell, if I had been hit like Booth did, when I got home, my dad would have read me the riot act for skating with my head down. Coley, you would have been hit by a guy wearing cloth pants at 15 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. Mike Richards came in at 30, 35 miles an hour, full speed, didn't leave his feet, but that actually makes the hit even worse because it gives him a solid plant. Any person who's done any fighting whatsoever knows the best – what you do is to throw a good punch is your punch starts at your toes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it explodes out from there. You actually leave your feet. You actually lose energy leaving your feet.
Well, here's Colley Campbell saying, hey, when I was playing – or hey, my dad would have – you know, we're talking about totally different contexts.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
How long has it been since Colley Campbell actually played – hockey, you know, and at any sort of level, as even laced up skates since, you know, in a decade, I doubt it.
No, you know, I mean, and, you know, to his credit in the Booth case, of course, you know, Gregory Campbell plays for the Florida Panthers, who's his son, so he recused himself, and still nothing happened. Mm-hmm. You know, and you and I fundamentally disagree about these things, but I look at the whole NHL justice system as just completely backwards. You know, if the Florida, it shouldn't be the league doing this. I mean, I've talked about this. I used to talk about this at length when I ran saber rattling and I was on Fan House, and I talked about this. And of course, it's completely orthogonal to the way we dispense justice. We look to the, you know, in the society, we look to the state or the federal government or the organization in charge of that who has that monopoly to dispense justice, but. By definition, they can't do that because justice is different in the eyes of the people who are involved. And in this case, you know, in these cases, every one of these is such a contextual thing that at the end of the day, there has to be a better way of figuring out what it is, what the players deem is acceptable and what they don't deem acceptable.
Everybody says then is the reason that fighting should be left in the game, because then the players clean up after themselves.
That's one part of the argument. I was actually thinking in a much different context in terms of, you know, arbitration between teams when they feel there's a grievance and all this other stuff that would actually come to rational conclusions about how it is that they were going to, you know, decide on who was and who was not harmed and what the restitution would be. There, and that's, to me, justice is all about restitution. It's not about, you know, Colin Campbell and Gary Bettman solidifying their power over the group of players who happen to play in, you know, in their league, which is a completely different, you know, so it's a different mechanism at work in terms of relationships of power and organization and all those things. But back to the original, really the original point, which is that you can't apply standards of what was acceptable from the 1970s and the 1960s and the 1980s to yeah. today. These guys used to smoke between periods, for Christ's sake. Okay?
Yeah, exactly.
They used to come to training camp to get into shape.
They used to go to the local bar after the game. Yeah, and
during the game.
Adult beverages. Well, now that hasn't changed very much, considering what's his butt, Jeremy Roenick did it. Not too long.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, Jeremy Roenick got benched by Gretzky or whatever, and got scratched by Gretzky, and, you know,
went to a bar in Vancouver.
Went to the bar. The smartest thing I think JR did was to show how inept Gretzky was behind the bench. But I mean, be that as it may, I mean, the quality of the athlete then and the quality of the athlete today. And then, you know, and the whole escalation, you know, mutually assured escalation thing in terms of more padding makes the guys more reckless and all this stuff. It's not a valid argument. You just can't judge these hits by that metric. It's not.
No, you can't. Sure. But it seems like what the NHL is worried about right now is finding any metric to judge headshots against. The thing that I heard most recently, I believe it was Darren Drager on NHL on the Fly on the NHL Network, was talking about it and saying that that if you try and legislate out headshots, it opens a whole nother can of worms. And I can understand while I can kind of understand that. Isn't it time that we just open the damn can of worms and see what happens? See what? Right. How else are you going to do this? You're not going to map everything out on paper.
No, you have to have. You know, I mean, look, we're supposed to live in a common law system, right? Where, you know, England, the roots of English common law are that there's, like, you know, seven or eight basic crimes, and that everything is then contextualized in the everything is in every grievance is seen in the context of those seven or eight broad general categories of crime, fraud, theft, murder, blah, 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 blah. Well, you know, the same thing here. And we can't legislate, well, if he leaves his feet, it's an automatic 5 minutes. And if he does this, it's an automatic this. And that makes no sense whatsoever. You just wind up, you know, with a rule book the size of the Code of Federal Regulations.
But it seems like that's what people expect the NHL to do, is that they expect them to say, this is, you know, the X equals Y, and across the board, there, now you're set, which essentially was exactly what they tried to do, applying, you know, the rules to hooking and holding, which really hasn't led to anything but a march to the penalty box anyways.
Right. Well, in the immortal words of H.L. Mencken, every layman has a solution to a problem that's simple, direct, and wrong.
Right. Well, exactly. Just read the comments on Puck Daddy and you'll see that.
Exactly. And that's my point exactly. And I don't mean to denigrate, you know, passionate hockey fans with this stuff, but, you know, it's a complex problem. I know the people who you can see it, especially when you watch Graves' commentary on Coach's Corner and see it in the subtext of the comments that we're seeing in these blog threads, which is that, you know, the people who love the physical aspect of the game, love the hitting in the game, are deathly afraid they're going to legislate it all out and turn it into women's hockey or international hockey or whatever. And I don't think that's what anybody wants. But, you know, it's the little slippery slope argument that just in this case, I can't abide it. It's not applicable to this situation. So you can't just defend, you know, any hit that brings you out of your seat and gives you an adrenaline rush and makes you feel good because you're a bloodthirsty maniac means that we should keep that in our game. That I just
no,
you know, that I don't countenance at all.
No,
you know.
And the thing is, in the way I look at it, it's going to happen anyways. At some point, whether it's, you know, the NHLPA standing up, you know, whether it's the NHL standing up, whether it's the insurance companies saying we've invested this much money or we're going to have to pay for these guys and headshots are going to, you know, ruin our businesses or, you know, all sorts of reasons why or angles that this could come from. And why not take a proactive stance and just do it yourself? Make some broad general rules, and then see how enforcing them works out, and filter it from there.
That would be rational, but unfortunately, you can see from the NHL at this point they don't want to do anything, and I don't think it's it's obviously coming from the old guard that's still in charge, and I think it starts with Colin Campbell, and I think it goes through a certain high-powered owners and GMs, and it's just not going anywhere. It's not going to go anywhere until we see a change in the guard in a sense. I'm not even sure how to put it. I mean, you know, what's the first thing Brian Burke does when he comes to the Toronto Maple Leafs? He's going to turn them into the Anaheim Brawling Ducks, and you know, because we know he knows he can win with that,
and we see how well that works at this point.
Yeah, you know, well, yeah.
While we're recording this, they're about to drop the puck on what might be the second win for the Toronto Maple Leafs of the season.
Now, all fairness aside, the Maple Leafs have been playing much better in the last 10 days or so. So
yes,
that team will be something to reckon with in about 2 months or so.
Well, and they're also, you know, they're playing against the Tampa Bay Lightning, who are 4-4-4 despite themselves. So that's, you know,
there's another mess, but in a both in a hockey sense and an economic sense. Yeah. I would love to just see them say, okay, we need to do something about the head-on collisions. This is something I know, you know, but I know I remember it distinctly. Darcy Rivière talked about this right coming out of the lockout, that one of the things when this really first hit Rivière's ugly head, all puns intended, and we came out of the lockout and we had all the speed and everything else in the game, and then the hits that were happening were a lot were a lot harder than what we remember, because the game was really slowed down during the trap era. So it was really hard to, you know, lay somebody out in open ice. And that's more to Scott Stevens' credit, I guess. But, you know, he said the hits that scared him the most were not the ones that happened in the run of play. It's the ones that happened against the run of play. So it's the head-on collisions. You've got one guy skating at 30 miles an hour into another guy skating in the opposite direction at 30 miles an hour. That's a 60-mile-an-hour collision.
Right.
As opposed to a guy hitting a, you know, guy coming in at a T-bone, that's still only a 30-mile-an-hour collision. That might be a 30-mile-an-hour collision on a knee, and knees were not meant to bend that way, be impacted like that, and therefore, you know, it's going to be bad. But if it's shoulder-on-shoulder in that way, so, you know, for example, if Mike Richards had come at David Booth slightly differently and gone shoulder to shoulder and not taken an angle to hit the guy's head, mm-hmm. you know, we wouldn't be, you and I wouldn't be having this discussion.
No.
And
no.
if the league had, you know, a more rational standard and an honest and firm commitment to get rid of plays like that from the game, Richards would have sat for 10 games like he deserved to.
Mm-hmm. But, well, and at the same time, where people want to say fighting keeps the vast majority of mainstream fans or casual fans away from being, you know, big fans. People don't want, you know, parents don't want their kids to see the fighting, which mm-hmm. I'm not entirely sure I agree with. But nobody wants to see these players leaving on stretchers.
No,
you know? Yes, it happens in other contact sports. But at the same time, you have, you know, you have certain rules governing those hits too, including college football, for instance, has helmet on helmet contact rules in
the NFL.
In a game that's all about that.
Yes,
that's all. Does the NFL have helmet on helmet?
Absolutely, they do. They also have, you know, the basic one, face mask.
Mm-hmm.
You know, grabbing a guy's face mask and wrenching his neck.
Yeah.
No, that's against the rules.
And, you know, and the NFL has no fear of suspending players, of getting, you know, I'm sure that I'm not a huge football fan, but you see it all the time that players, you know, here's another suspension for a guy acting like, you know, acting the fool, you
right.
know,
and this is that's in a sport that's just as macho, just as physical, just as everything as the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, much to the NFL's credit, they just, you know, they just set a zero tolerance rule. You put your hand on a guy's face mask, you're going to get a 5-yard penalty.
At least.
If you just put your hand on there by accident.
Yeah.
No, if you wrench, there's two different penalties in the NFL. There's the minor, and then there's the major. There's the personal foul. There's the minor penalty face masking, and then there's the personal foul face masking, which is completely different. I used to be a tremendous football fan. I am not any longer. and that's all about context. And that's mm-hmm. all about intent and, you know, what, you know, and severity. And in the NHL, you know, I'm sorry, hitting a guy in the head, make it an automatic 2-minute penalty. Look, the power plays in this league aren't very good anyway. Penalty killing is so good in this league, who cares if you give a guy a 2-minute penalty?
Yeah.
I mean, loosen up the hooking rules for Christ's sake and start giving out 2-minute penalties for headshots.
And God forbid you give them a penalty for something that they actually deserve to get penalized on.
Yeah, I know.
Rather than a tug here, a lift there of, you know, he took his hand off his stick and it's 2 minutes. Well, you know, there's an odd man rush. There's a penalty. You know, it's just, you know, and here's something that, I mean, this is important. These are professional athletes and they should act like professionals. And if they can't do it, which, you know, people want to blame the visor for the sticks coming up, the helmet for the, you know, for higher hits. You know, you can blame the speed as well. You can blame the win at any cost. You can blame the salaries. You can blame everything for it. But at the same time, these guys have to do something, whether it's the players, the, you know, the NHL themselves, something has to be done.
Yeah, I agree completely. And something has to be done in a hockey context, because the only thing that will matter, the only thing that matters to the players is what happens within the course, in the run of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Again, do you want to watch the headshots drop like a rock? Shorten the schedule to 65 games. Make every game so much more important that every power play is magnified, which is why you don't see this nonsense in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Not as much. You do see it every once in a while, and it's usually you know, by a guy, you know, by the name of Chris Pronger. But it's not nearly as bad. And I mean, and when it happens in the playoffs, it's magnified well above the normal. It's magnified because of the context, and the stakes. And, you know, the NHL does usually gets it somewhat right. But in the regular season, which is the bread and butter of your revenues for your league and all of your teams and everything else, You start giving out 5-minute majors again like you should for stuff like this in a 65 or 66 game schedule, I got news for you. Mike Richards ain't throwing a flying shoulder if he thinks he's gonna get thrown out of the game. He's gonna get thrown out of the game, given his team given a 5-minute major, and he gets a 5-game suspension.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree. And you know, you're looking at, you mentioned, you know, drop the schedule. Take a look at the, you know, what we're looking at is 82 games, and then if you make a deep run in the playoffs, you could be looking at 100 to 108 games.
I mean, the Pittsburgh Penguins went 7 games every series, didn't they, last year?
Every series, was it?
Yeah, I think every series was a 7-game series. If not only, no, they only
no, they, six they owned Carolina, I think. Right?
Oh, no, they went six. One of these years, these last 2 years, they went 7 games. They went 7 games practically every season. Every series.
That's
24 to 28 games. Yeah,
it's 100. That's too much for the body to hold on to. I mean, we're looking at look at what we're talking about now is Ovechkin's hurt, which you know that's going to kind of, you know, the biggest interest to me right now is kind of test his popularity against Crosby from when Crosby was hurt, and you know there's the media swarms around that, but you know it's. In the context of an 82-game season, you know, there's just so much punishment that these guys are being handed out. Yep. And it's, you know, and how can you say, in the context of 82 games, that headshots are going to be okay, that we don't need to do anything about headshots?
Has Brandon Sutter played hockey since the Doug Weight hit from last year?
I don't know. I don't think so. Yeah, it's...
Doug Weight has no business pulling down a salary in the NHL.
And is under any captain right now of the Islanders? Yeah, if that tells you anything about where they're at.
Well, they're improving game to game. That's the interesting part about it. But it has nothing to do with Doug Weight. The injury and you know, let's look the early season. You know, I mean, I think this is just a fluke run of injuries. But you know, aside from Gagner and Briere are both out again. You know, what a shock. You know, Simone Gagner, he's more fragile than Tim Connolly, for Christ's sake. And Briere's out with another groin injury. Somebody was arguing with me on HF that Drury's contract was worse than Briere's. I'm like, no.
Not in the context of that.
In the context of Danny Briere hasn't been healthy for a year and a half. And he was almost AHL waiver bait because they had cap problems. If somebody hadn't bailed out Paul Holmgren, Briere would be in the minors. I'm convinced of it because they had no need for him. They were already deep at center, and it makes no sense to me. It's between him and Brian Campbell, maybe the worst contracts for those particular teams in the league. The Rangers have cap problems because Glenn Sather's a moron. But that's, you know, he can't manage the cap, but neither can the Flyers, for that matter. But the rash of injuries that we've had so far this year, wow, it's been impressive.
It has been. It's all player on player stuff. It's not like, you know, bad ice and I twisted a knee, or you know, it's right. You know, there's too many stretchers. It's just too much.
Well, you know, there's a lot of that. Butchergrass had a thing about Crosby and Ovechkin. Had a comment about Crosby and Ovechkin. I think it was in his mailbag column a couple of weeks ago. And he was saying, if you get the opportunity, go watch them now. Because they're going to be at – this is it. This is as good as they're ever going to be, especially the way Ovechkin plays the game. He's going to start breaking down. He's going to start getting hurt. And he's going to be a shadow of the player that he is now, 5 years from now. And that still is probably a pretty good player. But it's not going to be the kind of, oh my God, generational talent that he is right now.
The other big news of the day is that pretty much finally the Coyotes bankruptcy issues are over, even if it's not exactly closure. It's not perfect closure yet. But the NHL closed today on the sale of the Phoenix Coyotes. To me, the most interesting part about all of this is that of the $140 million asking price, $13.3 million is going to basically go to Gretzky and Moyes. And that's it.
And the rest of it is the NHL pretty much recouping their own losses in operating the Coyotes.
Which is amazing to me because Moyes isn't recouping crap on his losses.
Yeah, of course not. Yeah,
this guy's going to lose like $95 million or something like that on the whole deal.
It's something insane like that. Even if only half of those expenses are, you know, really hockey related or whatever, because there's a lot of talk that, you know, he used the Coyotes as a dumping ground for his, you know, other business activities and whatnot. Right. But whatever. I don't know. You know, I don't know any of that stuff. You know, I don't know the details of it, and I'm not certainly not qualified to discuss it. I just know that, you know, he had a $100 million liability against the Coyotes and claim it against the team, and he's going to get less than 10% of that.
Yeah.
And this should be a lesson to anybody that this is how Gary, but this is how, this is what happens when you try and cross Gary Bettman.
Mm-hmm.
Period. Yeah. It's just that
we're
simple.
We're committed to keeping our teams, you know, to helping out our franchises and keep them in the cities that they're in, unless we're going to, you know, use it as leverage to get you a new, you know, get you a new arena like Pittsburgh,
right.
Or you know, better.
Or if you decide,
round or in if, Nashville, yeah.
Or if you decide that you know you're tired of running, you're tired of being strapped into running a team in forever until he decides it's time that it's unsalvageable, and if you try and do an end run around him, I will just, you know, flat out destroy you.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, you brought up an interesting point. I don't have anything else to say about the Coyote sale and that whole saga other than what I just said. But you did bring up a really good point when we were prepping tonight, which is, you know, for that kind of money, at the end of the day, what did they pay out? $13 million?
Mm-hmm.
For that amount of money, Jim Balsillie could just start his own league.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. He was $240 million was about as high as he went, maybe even a little higher than that.
So I think the highest one was $242.5, I think, actually.
$242.5. For $242 million, you could start your own hockey league in Canada, essentially be another – I mean, I hate to say WHA, considering that was pretty much, you know, founded on the hopes and dreams rather than the actual money and,
sure,
and hockey knowledge. Right. But, you know, with real cash, with that kind of cash, you could start your own league and put teams in marketable cities.
And you wouldn't have to deal with the good old boy club in the NHL. You wouldn't have to deal with that rapacious jackass Gary Bettman, who, you know, when you watch what he does in the context of what he's supposed to do, and it's his job as commissioner, he's very good at his job. And I've never really been sour. I'm not one of these people who really, you know, who, you know, reflexively hates Bettman. I've always been able to see things from, you know, both contexts and, you know, both sides and everything else. I never really had much of an opinion of Bettman. I hate everything about how the Phoenix Coyotes have been handled.
Mm-hmm.
But I hate every twist and move that the league and Bettman have engaged in. It's just, the whole thing is just so...
It's pathetic.
It's pathetic. It really is. It's an honest to God dead market. It's a dead team walking. What was it? What was the announced crowd last night?
5,855.
Meaning there were 2,800 people in the building.
Mm-hmm. And they all looked to be in the lower bowl. They all moved down last night by the
third
period.
Well, of course. I mean, you know,
from what I was seeing. Yeah.
Of course. Now, I went to a Florida Panthers game, but, you know, there were 14,000 people. And they announced a crowd of 14 or 15,000 people. I didn't have much of a problem believing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by the time the game started, that place was a good three quarters full. There, yeah. You know, two thirds to three quarters full. I mean, just, you know, looking at it, it was, you know, there was a good crowd. I mean, it was not a very good hockey crowd, but there were a lot of people there.
No,
4,000 people is just pathetic.
No, it's horrible.
And for them to do what they did and cut the ownership. Yeah, I mean, look, the Moyes came in and kept that team running for 5 years before the NHL started destroying. Came in to have to prop up any money,
mm-hmm.
prop them up with money. Yeah, he might not have made the smartest decisions in the world, but come on. At the end of the day, you're committed to hockey in Phoenix.
Yeah, no, there's no no one has made any money in Phoenix since the move from Winnipeg.
No.
And I understand that maybe there were reasons to move from Winnipeg. They didn't have a great arena and all of that, but you had a market that could support and happily supported an NHL hockey franchise. And I'm looking at the numbers right now of the attendance in Phoenix, which obviously is dead last. That's no surprise to anybody. And these are from ESPN, which is, you know, they aren't the greatest numbers in the world. We all, you know that.
But these are the announced crowds.
Essentially, yeah. And right now they're averaging 9,407 people per, you know, per game for the seven games that they've played at home. And, you know, if it weren't for the, you know, opening night $25 and $15 tickets, it'd be markedly below that. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right that you know, essentially for Gary Bettman to handle things in such a scorched earth kind of way, rather than to admit that yes, we have problems in the city. We have bona fide problems with the lease. You know, who signs a 30-35 year lease? Who does that? Why would that be acceptable? That's like signing, I don't know, let's say Rick DiPietro to 15-year. Oh, no, right. It's the exact same thing. And here they are saying, no, there's no problem, and we're committed to keeping the team there. Well, now that it's your money, now that the NHL is going to spend that kind of money keeping them there, I wonder how fast that tune is going to change.
It's got to change. And, you know, they were talking about it on Hot Stuff the other night that both Florida and Tampa are in real trouble. Tom Hicks is in real trouble down in Dallas. Not that there's anything wrong with the Dallas fan base, but he personally is in a lot of trouble. He doesn't have all, I guess, you know, if it's real estate or whatever his issue is. But Dallas is not a good is not a strong market right now. You have at least four teams. You've got Atlanta is, you know, if they can't sign Kovalchuk and they can't get the ownership, you know, Atlanta they've lasted longer than the Flames did so far, but. Honestly, it's not a solid market. I could see six teams in this league, and I forget the Islanders, who are drawing almost as well as Phoenix is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they're and they have 73% right now,
and they have no hope.
No,
there's no hope of a new arena. There's no hope of anything. The Islanders will be in Kansas City or Winnipeg or somewhere else. Look, the truth of the matter is that you could contract those six teams in the league right now, and the league would be better. Okay, now take those hockey players. Now, not all of them are obviously going to be. They're going to not stay in the NHL. Obviously, the Kovalchuks and the the Cavaliers are going to go to the NHL. But take most of those rosters. Take the guys the guys who would stay in the NHL. Take them and populate a new league with those guys. You got yourself a pretty good hockey team. You got yourself a pretty good hockey league. You could track six teams out of the NHL, and you already have six teams worth of guys waiting. For jobs, that's not even including the guys playing over in Europe who've been there's the guys who are playing over in Europe or sitting on the sidelines because there isn't any cap space because of the mismanagement of the cap of so many teams. There's plenty of guys playing in the AHL right now who would come up and make a kind of NAHL somewhere somewhere between the NHL and AHL in terms of quality. I mean, the truth of the matter is that there are plenty of NHL quality hockey players out there who don't have jobs. Mm-hmm. And if people are that rabid in Hamilton or in Western Ontario, you know, if Balsillie is smart, as I think he is, hell, start your own league.
Yep.
Just do it. There are plenty of arenas out there who got open dates. And do a 40 game season and do a regional league and do it right.
I don't know a lot about big business, but I would have to think that the bath that you would take on buying and relocating the Phoenix Coyotes versus starting a six team league and running it for 2 years to see how it goes seems to be like it would pretty much even out at that point.
In Toronto, they're so hockey mad they sell out the minors and junior league games, right?
Yeah,
am I correct?
Okay, look at the prices that they charge for the Leafs themselves.
For the worst team in hockey.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Toronto Maple Leafs are a $10 billion a year business. I saw the numbers the other day. Since the pension plan took over, they've built that from like a $50 million a year thing to a $10 billion a year business. They've gotten their money's worth. I think the pension, there's rumors that the pension might actually, the teachers' pension union might actually sell their stake in the team now that they've made made a ton of money, which would be good because then they would no longer be involved in the process. I was reading that post on Myrtle's site about the book that just came out about the Trouble in Leaf Country or whatever the hell it's called. It was a really good article by James Myrtle. It was a couple of weeks ago. If you guys are interested, check it out. But I can't see how it, you know, if Hamilton would be such a drop dead, or as Mike Robitaille would say, a lead pipe cinch for an NHL franchise to make money in, then you could start two teams right away. You put one in Etobicoke, you put one in Hamilton, you could have another one out in Winnipeg, you know.
Hell, jump on Quebec City before the NHL.
Jump on Quebec City. Turn around and contract Nashville and move the Predators into your league. You know, they can – the people – and this is the best part. This is the thing that – again, Myrtle had a great article the other day about the finances in Nashville. And he came to a very rational conclusion, which is that the people in Nashville have done a great job supporting the Predators. The problem is the NHL can't support – an NHL team can't survive drawing 14,000 people a night anymore. That's what killed them in Winnipeg. That's what killed them in Quebec City. If 14,000 to 15,000 a game isn't enough, they need more than that. They need 16,000 to 17,000 to 20,000 because that's what the NHL has moved to. That's what they've set their break even point for, or whatever their goal is. 20,000 seat arenas filled most nights. So that's
and nobody has those arenas. That's the thing. Nobody has it.
No, they're selling out in Chicago right now. It's the United Center is a friggin' barn. It's a whole 21,000 people. But what I'm getting at is that. But they've got a good 14,000 people that are willing to show up every night and support, you know, would support a team that really has no hope of winning. That's a great market. But in the NHL's economics, it's never going to be good enough.
They've gotten too big. They've gotten too ridiculous for what they, you know. And here you are. You have a guy who's willing to put money, good cold hard cash, into basically saving something that's going to die on the vine if it doesn't get, you know, if it doesn't get a huge infusion of reality quickly.
And so it seems to me that, you know, you've got markets that aren't being adequately taken advantage of by the NHL because the NHL is poorly managed, for lack of a better term. But by God, you could probably make yourself a really good regional 6 to 8 team league looking at the NHL's own demographics if you just set your sights lower. I mean, how good would a league be that – how good would an 8-team league be with 40 to 50 game schedule? Maybe they play 40 games. But they're high-quality games, right, over the same time period. They only play twice a week. They play Wednesdays and Saturdays. Or
get regional TV support, and you know, Tuesdays, you got an infusion of cash right there.
Tuesdays and Fridays. I mean, perfect. The NHL has Wednesdays and Saturdays pretty much locked up. So if you can get people to come out and watch your league on Tuesdays and Fridays, or Sundays and Fridays, even if you make it a weekend league, it doesn't matter. Whatever you have to do to make it work, you know. To me, it just seems like a no-brainer. If you've got the money and you've got the desire that Balsillie obviously has, how difficult could it be to run a league that has, you know, $30 million salaries, 8 teams, 40 games?
It's so much easier for these guys like Bettman, like the ownership, to say no than to say yes to something that's even slightly radical. It's so outside the norm for them.
Right.
Which is stunning. It's they rather than take in the money, accept that some of your markets are ready to go.
Yeah.
Are ready to be moved out, and go to places where you can make that money. They'd rather watch everything dwindle.
Well, I don't think they're that dumb. I think that I think that the problem here is that they've made a lot of promises to a lot of people. Let's back up for a minute. They've made a lot of promises to a lot of municipalities about getting arenas built and, you know, all of these things in order to get these ridiculous arenas built. Because frankly, none of these things exist if the taxpayers don't support them. Okay, mm-hmm. that's the original sin of modern professional sports in my mind. The taxpayer should never be on the hook for the friggin' arena. Period. You want a team, you want an arena, build it. It's yours. Yep. You own it. Pay us, and then you want tax concessions? Fine. I don't consider tax concessions to be a horrible thing. Anybody who can wrangle a tax concession out of a municipality is, you know, more power to them. Go you. taxes are theft. Get over it. Again, so saith the radical libertarian. But
just so we all understand the context of what you're saying. So we understand.
And kids, tonight, the word of the day is context.
That's true.
But, they made a lot of promises. They politically, they're going to be in a lot of hot water if they pull out of these markets without doing everything imaginable to make it work. It's going to make it very difficult for them again to sign another deal in another city that doesn't have an arena now to get that municipality to go in and do the scorched earth policy and get that municipality, especially in these economic times, mm-hmm. To build them an arena or whatever it's going to be. The truth of the matter is that, you know, the last economic depression of the 70s cost the NHL a tremendous number of franchises. There's a lot of movement. A lot of teams folded. A lot of leagues folded. Mm-hmm.
But that's what it should have been. That's what it had to be.
And that's what's going to happen this time.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think that the NHL is going to put themselves basically into hock before they make any radical moves that they really need to make. Even, I could see them, you know, you and I think pretty much agree that 4 to 6 teams could probably go. And nobody wants to see that happen. Nobody wants to see that happen to fans. Nobody wants to see that happen to the people that actually are going to the arenas and paying the prices. But I think that the NHL would probably maximum 2 at this point, only to try and save face, only to try and save things in a very unreasonable way. That they don't quite believe it enough that all of this growth that they keep talking about, and every year since the lockout we've talked about bigger numbers and more butts in seats and better revenues, I think they're going to have a hard time selling to themselves that they're in trouble.
Well, that may be true. I think there's something I thought about while you were speaking that popped into my head. They will move a couple of franchises. They will fold a couple of franchises to immediately be replaced by expansion franchises in more marketable cities. Mm. Look, they don't want Balsillie to take the Phoenix Coyotes and move them to Hamilton. This has been said many times by many and a very astute fan on the internet. They want the expansion fees for Hamilton. Mm-hmm. They're going to put a team in Hamilton or Etobicoke or Guelph or wherever it winds up being in the greater Toronto area, the GTA as it were. They want the expansion fees for that because the expansion fees for that franchise would be $300 million.
Which is too much.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Of course. And if Balsillie is smart, he wouldn't pay it. He mm-hmm. would turn around and start his own league. He could fund 4 teams for that price to start out with.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, easily, and not have to sign outrageous lease deals, and not have to. You know, he could almost write his own terms.
I agree. If he's really serious about expanding professional hockey in Canada, and not just owning an NHL franchise is just a feather in his cap.
Or own an AHL franchise that basically is a slave to the NHL.
Right. Well, I know he doesn't want – if I were him, I wouldn't want that either. You know, that's the way I've been treated. If I was Jim Balsillie and I had the money he had and I had the professed desire that he had and I had been treated the way I'd been treated by the NHL the last 3 times, I'd start my own league. Mm-hmm. Out of spite. I'd throw $500 million away just out of spite. I'd steal Alexander Ovechkin from the league just out of spite.
Yep. It's and hard to argue that. It's hard. It's really hard to argue
that's
that.
That's how badly they've scorched earth in the Phoenix situation, in my mind. I remember when this news first broke and you and I are talking about it, I said, oh, going to Hamilton. Give him the team. He just offered 10 times what that's – he just offered the NHL 10 times what that franchise is worth, cold hard
cash. Offered them a get-out-of-free jail card. I mean, it's a get-out-of-free jail. Get-out-of-jail-free card because here's a – it's just going to cost the NHL more money, especially now that they actually own the team. They can get whatever movement, you know, fee that they want or whatnot, and it's still not going to add up to being enough.
The truth of the matter is that – when there isn't a buyer for the New York Islanders or the Florida Panthers or the Tampa Bay Lightning or the Dallas Stars, Balsillo will come in and this time he'll lowball them. And there won't be any money around because I got news for you. All the money's at Goldman Sachs and they ain't buying hockey teams.
Because they're smart. At least right now they are.
because they have a direct line to the Federal Reserve, but that's a different issue.
They don't.
That's my other point.
Would you buy an AHL team? I mean, given the context of, you know, even though they're talking about, you know, they're basically pumping up their portfolio right now. They're not they're not talking about you know, losses, obviously nobody does, but given what's come out in court, given how Balsillo was treated, given how some of the other franchises are basically on their last legs, and given how like things are going on the island with the Lighthouse Project, given how things are, you know, that there are other places to go, would you buy an NHL franchise?
No,
I wouldn't.
No, I wouldn't buy a sports franchise. I wouldn't buy a sports franchise with your money. I mean, that's the equivalent of, you know, the old joke about, never mind. But you don't understand what I mean. This came up in content. I wouldn't buy an NHL franchise with other people's money.
No, I wouldn't do it.
It's a bad bet. Mm-hmm. You know, professional sports as a market, as a general market, is imploding. It was in a bubble. Fueled by high housing prices and all this stuff. I've been talking about this for years. It's another one of these long-term big projects that the structure of production gets destroyed via the printing of – by the artificial lowering of interest rates. It's the Austrian business cycle theory, guys. Go look at it. But cars, houses, big stadiums, sports, and all the attendant inflation in salaries for sports figures – when people have all this disposable monthly income to go and do this stuff, yeah, you can see the revenues are like through the roof. I got news for you. That's all going to change.
Oh yeah,
it's all changing right now. I mean, when pork chops are $4.50 a pound, I got news for you. People are not going. They're not buying new hockey jerseys at $300 a piece.
No,
it's just not happening.
Nope, and there's only so many times that you can do a special thing that is a one time only. Yeah, there's only so long that lasts.
Who the hell would ever buy those barber pole things that those barber pole abortions that the friggin' Canadians were wearing the other night?
Those are painful.
Those are epileptic inducing. Those are fit inducing.
You know, it was kind of funny. At the beginning of the season, right before the season started, it was announced that the New Jersey Devils were going to have, like, for one game only, kind of a heritage jersey that they were going to wear of, you know, of the green added back into the New Jersey colors because it used to be red, white, green, and black.
Right.
And a couple of people were, I'm so excited about this. And my comment was, it's only a money grab when other people want it other than you. And
yeah,
that's
exactly
essentially what's going on. That you know, how many times are we going to have the exact same money grab over and over and over? Special one-time thing. This is, you know, our heritage jersey and this and that. Eventually, that nostalgia is going to hit the wall of my pocketbook or whoever's pocketbook.
You use the words heritage and New Jersey Devils in the same sentence, and I want to see them. I blanked out because I'm like, that doesn't parse in English.
I want to see
it's a 25-year-old franchise. There's no – it's like the Atlanta Thrashers putting out a heritage jersey.
I want to see the heritage of if they wear Kansas City Scouts jerseys for a game, would you be happy?
Well, yeah, that would be different. I mean, that's, you know, that's at least, you know, unique, and sometimes unique in the universe is actually valuable.
I think it's extremely valuable right now. I think that's about all that anybody's got right now, that, that, you know, having something interesting and different is what's going to, you know, help out more people and get, and the, and right now the NHL doesn't have that.
Well, they have a, They have a very good product.
They do.
They have a very good product for warts and all and everything else.
That you and I love.
Yes. You and I will come on here every week and we will do the exact same thing. But, you know, when looking at the grand, looking at everything in context, there's that word again. Wow, there's a lot to worry about, and there's a lot to, and there's a lot to look at and go, this is not, you know, this is not right. And, you know, it's easy as fans and as outsiders, it's easy to get carried away with our own analytic skills and sense of self-importance and rightness of our arguments and all this stuff, and think that the people who are in charge of this league are morons. That's like rule number one of being a fan. The people who are, you know, in positions of power and authority are morons. You know, be it the head coach or the GM or the owners of the, they're not morons, but they aren't necessarily always really on top of things either. And I think that this is really what the crux of the what you and I are discussing right now is about. That, you know, I'm sure that they have a whole lot of doomsday scenarios that they work up in the Board of Governors meetings about which franchise, and they know better than anybody else, which franchises are really in the states that they think they're in. The real question is going to be when the ownership groups of those franchises decide they just won't anymore. And, you know, with the way they treated Balsillie in Phoenix, when Charles Wang wants to get out of the New York Islanders and he turns around and tries to fire sell the thing to, you know, Benny the bookie down the street for 25 bucks and a bottle of bourbon,
that's
about what the Islanders are worth. The NHL is going to tell him, no, you can't do that. And then it's going to get interesting.
Well, I think the real question is how scared, you know, these guys, what's it going to take to actually scare them straight? You know,
I don't know. I don't know at this point. They're the Canadian dollars is helping them right now. It's at 94 cents. It's hit as high as 97 cents. And it's all happening, of course, during the hockey season when all their revenues are booked. So there's already early talk that the cap might not go down next year. Given the fundamentals of the dollar and given the situation that situations that I see outside of this context of hockey, I don't expect the Canadian dollar to weaken unless the Canadian government decides to commit, you know, harikiri, and I don't see that happening. You know, we may see the Canadian teams continue to support via the currency trade. The currency arbitrage, the black holes that are Florida, Tampa, and, you know, all the ones that we've talked about already. You know, nobody's talking about it right now, but there's a real potential problem brewing in Carolina. Revenues are falling off the cliff because the team is, you know, unlike Toronto, they may have more than one win, one more win than Toronto, but they're the worst team in the NHL right now. And people in Carolina don't have any, in North Carolina, they don't have any patience for losers. They got plenty of sports to watch down there. College, professional, NASCAR, this, that, everything else. They got plenty of things to do with their money. They don't have to go watch a terrible, old, uninterested, degenerating hockey team. You know, those the teams winning, they'll be there. But that's a market that, you know, only shows up when the team is winning, and that's actually a good. And by definition, I think that's actually a really good fan base. If you want my honest opinion? You should only support a team that wins. But. Really, well,
it's hard to support one that, you know, right now they've lost nine in a row. I mean, they're 1-6 and 3.
Yeah.
In their last 10. Sorry. That's insane. That's, you know.
Yeah. They're 9 game losing streak. And they were outscored 11-2 in their last two games to Phoenix and San Jose. I mean, they just put in just stinker after stinker.
And they don't really have trade bait. They don't really have anything that's worth digging themselves out of that hole.
Yeah, they signed Cam Ward to a big extension, and he immediately – and visions of beach balls are in, and Photoshop are in everybody's Everybody's Arsenal. I don't know. But they're not playing well in front of them. That's the other issue. But that's I don't want to get into what's wrong with Carolina. But
there's barely a goalie in this league that you can't say that about. I mean, their goalies have gotten so much better. Even Jose Theodore can pull out wins in front of a team that has a good solid defense. You know, any goalie out there, even Toskala, if he had something a little more sustainable in front of him.
Toskala will be fine once they move him. Somebody, LeBron was talking about the other day. It's that the natural trade right now between the Leafs for the Leafs is to go and get Jaguar from Anaheim and then just move Toskala for anything you can get. Toskala will be fine once he's out of the pressure cooker that is Toronto. There are some guys who just can't play under that pressure, and I think he's one of them.
I can't imagine what it's like.
I have no idea. It killed Andrew Raycroft. It's killed all sorts of people. Mm-hmm. It's killed, it's destroyed many a career. It's like being a right-handed hitter for the New York Yankees. Same thing.
Well, we're going to see a few things by the time we talk next time, including whether or not the Toronto Maple Leafs actually have another win in there. By now. Then.
Most likely.
And I'm sure that we're going to see some more chatter about what's going on with the NHLPA as well. Maybe we'll have a better picture by then.
Yeah, because right now we don't have much of a picture at all, because it's pretty much looks like a Jackson Pollock inning at this point.
So. Yeah, the NHLPA is pretty much the new Phoenix Coyotes. So we'll check in and see where they're at with that next week.
All right.
All right. Thanks a lot, Tom. That does it for episode 52 of The Rink. You can always find The Rink at www.rinkpodcast.com, where you can subscribe in iTunes, leave a comment for anything that you find here. Our Twitter feed is at twitter.com/rinkpodcast, and our email address is rink@rinkpodcast.com. Our phone number is 845-704-RINK. It's 845-704-7465. Thanks a lot for listening to The Rink.